So welcome, everybody. This is the Guelph Fight Back Committee kickoff event for the Defeat Harris campaign. The retreat, long retreat, is over. I am one of the co-MCs for the event. My name is Marie Riley, and this is my other co-MC, Janice Folk Dawson. And we are a part of the Fight Back Committee, which is a coalition of many groups. I'm with the Guelph Action Network, a group of local activists, and as well as with the Labor Council and QP 1281. And I'll just let my sister here introduce herself.
I'm Janice Folk Dawson, and I'm with QP 1334 at the University of Guelph, and I'm also on the Guelph District Labor Council. I have to say that this first introduction is absolutely delightful for me. I have seen Clarice many times. We've met at many QP functions, many OCAP functions, and it always seems that it's Guelph going into Toronto to support OCAP. And with great pleasure, I'd like to introduce you to Clarice Keeling. She is from QP 3903, which is at York University, and she is one of the allies from OCAP Toronto.
I think this is the first time the mic was actually at my height level, so this is great. It's a good start. It's really nice to be here outside. Usually these things take place inside, so what a beautiful night. I guess I don't need to outline or provide you with a litany, what John Clark calls a litany of woes, of what's been happening in this province in terms of the profound crisis that all of us have been undergoing. The Harris government, as we know, have attacked workers, have attacked students, have attacked the poor. They've privatized public services, criminalized the homeless, revoked tenants' rights, gutted workers' protection, and dismantled public health and education. You know, whether we're talking about the Government Efficiency Act or whether we're talking about the Public Sector Accountability Act, changes to the Employment Standards Act, we're talking about a heck of a lot of really, really awful things that are going on in this province. But at the same time, what we've seen is a dramatic escalation in the level and degree of resistance and militancy, not just in the province, but across the globe. Whether we're talking about the People's Uprising, what I call the People's Uprising, the March on Queen's Park last June 15th, whether we're talking about a dramatic increase in the use of direct action, in the use of flying squads to get the goods, whether we're talking about recent protests against free trade and investment deals here and across the globe, Seattle, Washington, Windsor, Toronto, Prague, Quebec City, Sweden, Italy, whether we're talking about the general strike in Bolivia, whether we're talking about trade unionists who defied police repression in South Korea, whatever examples you wanted to take, the evidence indicates a rising tide of resistance, a momentum being built up. And this is key. And with this rising tide of resistance and militancy, an opening has been created. This is an opening that we must seize, we need to seize. And we can build on that and seize that. And I think oftentimes people don't participate in trying to change things because they think that their participation won't mean anything, it won't make a difference. Right? When people know that their participation in things actually makes a difference, actually has some meaning, has some impact and effect on the way things run in this province, then I think people will be willing to participate, will be willing to get involved and do something to eject Harris out of here. So I'm from the OCAP Allies, and I just want to tell you a little bit about the OCAP Allies and what it is we do. Who we are. The OCAP Allies are a group of trade unionists and social justice organizations that came together shortly before June 15th of last year. We've served as a network of activists to support OCAP actions, whether we're talking about stopping deportations or evictions, ensuring the provision of social assistance payments, affordable housing, protection for those who are targeted by police and so forth. But it's also a network which has helped to spread OCAP's methods of active resistance across a broad spectrum of communities and constituencies. And it's a network, the OCAP Allies is a network which has helped to mobilize members of its various organizations to join in actively resisting the Harris agenda on as many levels and on as many fronts as possible. This network, I'd really like to point out, not only helps those of us who are directly being helped, but I guess I would argue it also protects those who have managed to win a decent wage, because the more desperate unemployed workers are, the easier it is for employers to keep what little they throw at us. It is not short-sighted self-interest, but real solidarity. Seeing one's own struggle in that of another, seeing one's own struggle as essentially connected to the struggles of others. By helping each other, we help ourselves. There's a saying in the labor movement that once you fight hard for something and manage to actually get it, you know, whether you're talking about a wage increase, whether you're talking about some small social program or a scrap of affordable housing, once you have that, you need to socialize it. You need to spread it around. In order to keep it, you need to pass it on to others to make sure that others get it, to narrow the gap between what you have and what others have at the moment. Otherwise, it's way too easy to carve off one section of people, attack that small section of people. If a whole bunch of people are able to fight hard to get something, it's a lot harder to attack a common front. A concrete expression of what OCAP allies do in conjunction with OCAP is the work that flying squads do. And I just want to talk a little bit about flying squads as well, because they're pretty key. They're pretty essential in what we're doing. Can everybody hear me okay? Great. just wanted to check. A flying squad is an association of activists, whether trade unionists or high school students. And recently there was a group of high school students that started a flying squad who confront corporate bosses and their political servants by disrupting the normal functions of their operations or institution or organization or business. Much like during a strike, flying squads, they provide support picketing, support on the picket line for people who are on strike. They work with anti-poverty groups to ensure that folks, whether employed or not, unionized or not, get affordable housing, social assistance. Flying squads work to stop deportations by visiting immigration offices and occupying them, and stop evictions and participate in mass protests side by side with activists of all stripes from all communities. Flying squads help to foster solidarity across workplaces in different sectors. They unite workers across the labor movement with non-unionized workers, with unemployed workers, and with other groups that face the oppression and horrific conditions imposed by this government and the corporations who serve this government. Flying squads allow members of a union local to stay mobilized and active, even when folks aren't on strike or when folks aren't bargaining, and thus opens up avenues in which people can actively participate. So it allows for a democratic participation, rank and file union participation. And it fosters a sense of militancy, more active forms of resistance, which aren't passive, which are more active, which go beyond mere token, go beyond mere symbolic protest. Flying squads also enable members to use their strength of their collective labor, to use their collective power to influence government policy between elections, and thus, again, promoting active, not passive forms of resistance and opposition. And I'm going to highlight the fact that flying squads very much participate in civil disobedience and direct action. And these things are key to this fall, let me tell you. It allows a way that people can become more active in an oppositional way, to provide a more coordinated defense, a more coordinated offense, actually, against the Harris government, against corporate bosses. Because when we coordinate our efforts, when we put into place structures and mechanisms which allow this coordination to take place, we are much more likely to be successful at launching just the kind of broad and dynamic counteroffensive needed to change the way things are done in this province, indeed, to change the course of history itself. And each time our flying squad in... QB 3903. Each time our flying squad participated in a flying squad event, shall we call it, we got a flood of email from people who just said, you know, like, this was amazing for me. I've never before participated in something where we actually made a difference in people's lives. I want to do more of this. How can I get more involved? There's been a huge increase in the number of people wanting to and beginning to become more active in these flying squads and the actions that flying squads do. So I think all of us can, I think it's essential that we must work alongside OCAP and many other social justice organizations this fall toward a campaign of economic disruption, because I think it presents us with a unique opportunity to move beyond moral indignation, this passive token symbolic protest, to actually come together around a common goal of disrupting the normal functions or operations of the individuals or institutions that exert power over us, to actively withdraw our consent, to organize in a different way, a way which mobilizes people to disrupt, not just to disapprove of the system under which we live, the system which wreaks so much havoc in our lives. It's to disrupt in such a way that we create a mass movement at the same time as we are changing power relations. It is a way of changing existing power relations at the same time as we are creating a mass movement. We can do this together. It's to inflict economic pain to create a political crisis such that it is easier to give us what we demand than to resist us. In other words, to raise the social cost for those in power such that it is easier to give us what we want rather than continue fighting us. And I don't think, we just don't have the luxury of inaction anymore. There's been way too much suffering in this province, in this city, in Toronto, wherever we go. I mean, in Toronto, a woman just died because she was forced under house arrest, had her welfare withdrawn, and was not allowed out of the house to escape the heat. That's an absolute tragedy that should have never happened. That, among many others. So we need to organize, we need to mobilize, we need to politicize people in our own communities, doing that very unglamorous day-to-day grunt work, building for this fall campaign to disrupt, to escalate, to diversify our tactics, to retaliate, to be as creative and dynamic as possible. And I don't know how long I've been going, so, but I'll just say a few more things about, I'll just say a couple things about the Common Front, and probably others are going to go on about that too, but the Common Front, the key that work that the Common Front is going to be doing, we realize that getting rid of Harris won't solve everything, that this fight won't end until working and poor people take the resources into our own hands, but it's a really, really important step along the way to get that guy out of here. Very key. Because there's no doubt about it that he's one outgrowth of the whole rotten economic system that we're fighting. One really important outgrowth. And so it's a very worthy endeavor to boot him out. And if we boot him out, other people won't be as likely to screw us along the way. if they know we're not going to stand for it. So the Common Front is an amalgamation, a group, an alliance of anti-poverty activists, trade unionists, single mothers, the unemployed, the homeless, First Nations communities, anti-racism activists, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered people, people of color, you name it. Engaging, building for this fall campaign of economic disruption. And it's not, the economic disruption is not a new idea. This is what people on strike do all the time. They disrupt the normal operations of workplaces all the time. So we have a lot to glean from our work in these areas. So we shouldn't be timid and cautious. We have a lot of experience that we can draw on, is what I'm trying to get at. The Common Front has a logistics coordinating committee that's going to shut down the financial district on October 16th. Starting off with a pancake breakfast at 5 a.m., and with a snake march through the financial district. The propaganda outreach committee has made tons of posters and pamphlets and leaflets directed at different communities. Websites, there's a way to publish and put announcements on the web. Banners and doing outreach to labor groups. The research committee is doing research into corporate targets. The legal team is securing an office for the day. And providing legal support for folks on the day with a list of lawyers and going to be having legal training. And there'll be medical training and post-October 16th actions taking place. In other words, there's a lot going on, and around the province, tens of communities are actively mobilizing for this. So Judy Darcy at a recent QP Ontario convention said that we need to take the struggle to a whole new level, go on the offensive like never before, mobilize the broadest coalition, and engage in civil disobedience and direct action. This is what somebody from the labor movement said. So I think that we can do this. This can all coalesce in a wave of protest, which will shut the province down and allow us an opportunity to start implementing our vision of what this province should be like.
All right, thank you, Clarice. Okay, next I am very pleased to have with us here today someone from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty in Toronto, which is not why many of us are active. I mean, many of us are active in our workplaces, in our communities, in our families, and day-to-day and the things that we do already. But something that OCAP has managed to do is pull a lot of this together and give us, you know, a common vision of how we can build this movement to shut down Mike Harris. So I am pleased to introduce Stefan Pilipa from the OCAP.
This is loud. I first of all want to bring solidarity and greetings from the membership of OCAP in Toronto to the GSA and to the Guelph and District Labor Council, and specifically to the PSAC workers who are on strike. I think we should all give them a big hand. When Clarice was talking about the growing level of militancy, she was quite modest about it, and I think people should know and be reminded that part of the reason that Judy Darcy and Sid Ryan have been talking such a radical line is that QP 3903 went on a strike almost a year ago, and they won that strike quite beautifully, I might add. And from what I heard, when they went to the QP convention, they were the most popular rank and filers there. So I think that we shouldn't underestimate the power of a union local to really have a significant effect on the larger movement. Now, what I wanted to talk about today was what Clarice talked about as well in passing was Kimberly Rogers, a woman. She was 8 months pregnant. She was living in Sudbury. And when the heat wave passed over Sudbury, like Clarice said, she was on house arrest. And she was on house arrest because she was caught and convicted of welfare fraud for collecting a student loan while being on welfare. And they put her under house arrest. She can only go out for 3 hours a week on Wednesday to go shopping. And a couple days before August the 9th, she perished in her apartment in a sweat box. And they found her a couple days later. And her body had been so badly decomposed that a positive identification wasn't necessarily possible. Yeah, and she was denied her medication for depression, and it was a very grim situation. And there's some obvious conclusions and theories and stuff that we can have about that particular case. One of them, or a couple of them, is that if Mike Harris hadn't cut welfare in 1995, or that if he hadn't changed the eligibility criteria for getting welfare, or that if he hadn't bothered to engage in a political and an ideological war against the poor, that Kimberly Rogers would be alive today, and perhaps would be looking forward to having her son or daughter, breastfeeding her son or daughter, perhaps looking forward to a career as a social worker, which is what she defrauded welfare in the first place to actually get herself a little bit more income and pull herself out of poverty. And perhaps she would have been a social worker and looked forward to helping other people that were in a similar position as she was, and that helping other people get through the problems that she went through. Unfortunately, her life was snuffed out by this government. And snuffed out for pretty despicable reasons, primarily a confluence between a rabidly right-wing government, a confluence between the interests of a rabidly right-wing government and the interests of an incredibly greedy business community in Ontario.
Yay! Yay!
Now, beyond the obvious conclusions that we all draw, I think there's an even bleaker reality that we have to, we can't turn away from. And that bleaker reality, and I don't enjoy talking about it, and I don't think struggle is about necessarily always being comfortable, but the, one of the bleakest realities that we can possibly imagine is that Kimberly Rogers, there's a good chance that had she not died in that heat wave, she might very well have died. There's a good chance that she would have died in the years preceding that heat wave just due to the poverty that this government has inflicted. Not only did this government just cut welfare and change the eligibility criteria, they introduced workfare. They raised rents. They cut wages and continue to refuse to increase the minimum wage. They cut they cut subsidies to child care. They did all of these things and are continuing to wage that particular war. And it's not just a war on the poor. It is a war to make everybody poor. And I think that's a point that we have to actually face, and it's a point that we have to realize. And you'll excuse me if I have to refer to my notes. Sometimes I get ahead of myself a bit. Sorry. I can't read my own writing. This idea that we have to look at the starker reality and that it's much, much broader than demonization of single mothers with children or people who have mental health issues or people who are on the street. I say this because I think it's very, very important for us to realize that it's vital for the continuing well-being of the Harris government that we see Walkertons as isolated incidences, that we see Dudley George as an isolated incident, that we see Edmund Yu as an isolated incident, and that we see Kimberly Rogers as an isolated incident, that they are, just errors that the government made, or that they are just, perhaps benevolent misconduct on behalf of some government official. That's not the case at all. What is the case is that Harris is engaged in the normalization of poverty, as I said before, and is the systematic institutionalization of poverty. And if we continue, as is sometimes the case, to ignore the fact that that's really the agenda, then we are that much less likely to rise up against it and actually do something about it. And I think that's a key point. And we have to do something about it, and this is even a more important point, while we have the chance to do something about it. It's not as though we are in a situation where we can sit around and wait perhaps for the perfect moment to engage in struggle. It's not the case at all. We have a limited window of opportunity. And I'll use an example that I think is somewhat disconnected and perhaps a little bit obtuse, but I'll ask people to bear with me. Back at the turn of the 19th century, there was a catastrophic change in the weather patterns, an El Nino event, that swept across much of what we know as the Third World today. And 20 million people died from the 1882 to about 1901. Now, this is coincidentally the same time that, this would be interesting to the anti-globalization activists. This is the same time that they introduced the world market for wheat. And what you had was you had these colonial masters stockpiling wheat while tens of millions of people died and starved to death. Now, there was all sorts of resistance movements, all sorts of anti-famine resistant movements that sprung up in these countries. And there's one particularly interesting one that we'd all do well to remember and pay respect to, because it's both inspirational and quite tragic. In southern China, tens of millions of people were starving, Chinese villagers, particularly the women members of the village, got together and began engaging in these long marches where they'd hundreds and hundreds of them get together, and they'd march on the local landlord or wealthy landowner, and they would file into the courtyard, and they would all sit down in the courtyard in single file in rows and rows and rows of Chinese women and children and men, and they would take out their cutting boards and they would take out their cleavers, and in unison they would chop at their cleavers, and slowly getting louder. And of course, the implication was that if they weren't fed by these rich people, that they would eat the rich people. Woo! one of the tragic things that that actually happened was that they were forced to actually eat the rich people, that they would raid the kitchens, kill the people, and eat anything that was in sight. That's how bad the droughts were. Now, this movement was very strong, and it was very powerful, and it was including a lot of people. Now, the problem was that they were starving, and after a couple of months, they all died. And when I say there's a limited window of opportunity to defeat the Harris agenda, it's similar to the situation with those Chinese villagers, that as the Harris agenda progresses, we are going to suffer more and more. We are going to see our wages decrease more and more. We're going to see rents go up more and more. And what's going to happen is that as the years go by, we're going to be too busy stuck fighting rearguard battles in our workplaces, in our communities, and in our schools, everywhere in society, because we've let them get away with doing too much damage, and we didn't stop them when we had the chance. If we fail to act, this is going to be the reality for us. And I encourage people to think about that, and I encourage people to understand that, you know, when we engage in resistance movements against this government, as Clarice said, we are actually attempting to change the course of history, and I think that's an important, that's a heavy burden to bear, but it's also a very honorable burden to bear, and I think we should all take that to heart. Now, sometimes, you know, this is not a hypothetical situation what I was talking about, with things getting so bad that we can't fight back. In Toronto, for OCAP, it's not something that's a what-if in the future or something that may or may not happen. It's happening right now. And I'll tell you why. We are losing a lot of members of our organization, particularly our homeless members, not because they're not interested in the struggle or because they've given up, but because they've died. And I would encourage specifically union locals to imagine a situation where they've lost 10 or 20 of their union local members in the last year because of bad workplace practices or safety problems. That's what's been happening to Toronto and to our members in OCAP. And perhaps sometimes we're criticized because we seem to be too eager to get into confrontations, and we seem to be too angry at demonstrations, and that we take these bold actions and we get criticized. But that only comes from the fact that we're losing our brothers and sisters and our friends. And there's not anyone amongst us here who wouldn't take those types of actions if they did not lose their friends and their co-workers and their family members. So I think that is a key thing for us to remember, and should be a guiding light for us. Now, I was asked to give a bit of an update on the campaign, and I feel like a special one here because I'm the only one who has this piece of paper with all the update material on it. So I'm going to go through it a little bit, and hopefully you'll be impressed, but hopefully you'll see things that can be built on as well. Now, the first place I'll start with is Guelph, because we're here. From what I'm told, there is a labor alliance on the university campus that is quite strong, made up of students and blue-collar workers and the faculty as well. And just to let you guys know, when I talked about that in Toronto at a large public meeting, that got a standing ovation. As well, this labor alliance is strongly allied with the Guelph District Labor Council, which has signed on to the campaign. And from what I'm told as well, you guys have perhaps some targets in mind that you are willing to subject to the will of the people. And I won't go into details because I actually don't know the details, but you guys do, and we will back you 100%. The next place, Hamilton has a fight back committee that's been formed for months now. They are going to be having an economic disruption action on October the 19th, 3 days after Toronto. So they're going to shut down the financial district in Hamilton, and there's the expected high school and university walkouts as well. London has a date picked as well. October the 26th, a group of anti-globalization activists and a group that calls themselves the Action Family has set their sights on the Tory policy convention that's going to be visiting London on October 26th. As well, they're going to shut down the financial district there. And St. Catherine's Committee has been formed in Windsor. This is very interesting, and this is, you know, a sign of things to come. CAW brothers and sisters are organizing to shut down the temporary labor agencies that are supplying cheap labor to the auto party factories, and they're going to open instead what they're calling an OCAP hiring hall to put the temporary agency companies out of business completely in Windsor. Very interesting as well. Chatham just had the other week, at the end of the month, a fundraiser for OCAP where they had an auction in the park and a barbecue, and they had this auction where everybody would bring their stuff to sell at the auction. You know, it's just junk or pieces of their furniture or whatever, anything that they could sell to each other to raise as much money as they can. So they were bidding on coat hangers and all this type of stuff for large sums of money. And then a CEW brother brought Buzz Hargrove's book, Labor of Love, and tried to auction it off. And nobody wanted to buy it. Finally, somebody offered 10 cents for it, and a small, very minuscule bidding war ensued until somebody at the back of the room, frustrated with the whole process and wanted to get it over with, said, "I'll give you a buck for it if I can burn it." So if there's any doubt where the rank and file is of the CAW in terms of this campaign, we know that they're with us. Of course, in Toronto, as everybody probably knows by now, on October 16th, the Toronto Ontario Common Front Committee is going to be shutting down the financial district in the economic center of this country. And we were thinking, we wanted to shut down the stock exchange, but it doesn't exist anymore because it's all done over internet. And we thought, how are we going to get around that? Well, we thought we'll just shut down the whole goddamn thing. From Queen Street to Front Street, from University to Yonge Street. Just to mention, by the way, that's a very strong committee out there on a weekend where most people are on holidays. We had almost 80 people at the one of the organizing meetings. Now, what's even more interesting, and it's all very interesting, what's even more interesting is that in places that you wouldn't necessarily think there would be a radical bent to them, for instance, Oakville or, for instance, Mississauga, as we speak right now, Mississauga and the Peel region is having their first inaugural Ontario Common Front Peel Region Organizing Committee. In Ottawa, which is as well a place that's not necessarily known for its labor militancy, they formed a group called OCAT, Ontario Coalition Against the Tories, and not to be confused with OCAT, and they are planning as well an economic disruption campaigns later in the fall, and that date has yet to be announced. As well, Sudbury, the home of Kimberly Rogers, the Sudbury Coalition Against Poverty, has been having a hell of a lot of public meetings, and they're having people, had Jaggi Singh, they had Sean Brandt from OCAP up, and they have a strong high school flying squad up there, and they plan high school and university walkouts, and they plan an economic disruption campaign in the financial district as well. Peterborough. We're going to go through every city and town. I'm joking. Peterborough, about 8 months ago, had a small PCAP organization made up of a small number of members, and they were struggling. In the last 8 months, they've grown to a viable and perhaps, what some people could say, a very powerful anti-poverty organization. They have taken upon themselves to organize the September Southern Ontario Assembly for the Ontario Common Front, which is happening on September the 8th if people are interested in going down. And we have a Peterborough speaker there as well. She'll talk about it. And Kingston. Kingston has been having a massive graffiti campaign, and it's something that the public officials and the police in Kingston can do nothing about. Every time they take down a piece of graffiti that says "Defeat Harris," there's five more in its place. And this stuff isn't even organized. It's spontaneous that's happening. High school students, university students, and workers are going around the city expressing their opinions about what they think about Mike Harris. Belleville, a small group called the Belleville Tenants Action Group, is having a large public meeting in Belleville as well, and they're forming a chapter, and they're looking to economic disruption. Montreal is sending busload after busload on October 16th. Hopefully they'll be sending the Black Bloc to help us out down in the financial district. In terms of First Nations communities, this has probably been the most heartening development that's been happening. They, in different First Nations communities, in Tayendanega, in Akwesasne, in Ganawakwe, different Mohawk militants have formed these groups called Seventh Fire Groups. And they, so I've been told, are not going to wait for October the 16th to kick off the campaign. They want to jump at the gun, and they're going to pick a target very shortly and get to work on that. As well, they're organizing a First Nations Seventh Fire gathering where they're going to take their tents and teepees and pitch them at Queen's Park and stay the whole weekend and do their organizing right there in front of Queen's Park. Of course, CUPE is from the statements of Judy Darcy and Sid Ryan. They seem to be on board, and we anticipate workplace actions from CUPE as well as CAW flying squads. Despite Buzz Hargrove's perhaps mistaken opinions about OCAP, to put it lightly, the flying squads have reasserted their solidarity with OCAP as well. For people who have been following the debacle between Buzz Hargrove and OCAP, we got from a reliable source that when the decision to defund OCAP $10,000 came to the national executive, popular to the publicly made statements from Buzz Hargrove and Steve Watson and others in the CW, it wasn't a wash. It wasn't as though everybody in the national executive was against OCAP. In fact, there was quite a heated debate. People actually didn't want to defund OCAP. And those people remain strongly firm with OCAP as well. And just to wrap up very quickly, the general lead up for the October 16th and the campaign is in general is we're going to be having a speakers caravan starting mid-September and going to October. So if Guelph and other people from other communities want the speakers caravan to stop in your city, let me know before I leave. And as well, on Labor Day in Toronto, you want me to wrap up? You want the caravan? Okay, you got it. As well as Labor Day in Toronto, we're going to make sure that we have the best-looking banners, the loudest-making noisemakers, the best flags, the best T-shirts, the best stickers and propaganda, and we're going to assemble at 8 o'clock in the morning and make sure there is not one rank-and-filer that doesn't know about the campaign and doesn't know about October 16th, and we're going to make sure that happens as well. Just to wrap up briefly, I wanted to pay respect to Kimberly Rogers and her memory. Sometimes it's somewhat controversial or even a little bit dishonorable to use the memory of the dead for political ends, but in this case I don't think she would mind. There's been a suicide epidemic in Pikangikum. Native youth have been killing themselves. I think it's 16 at this point. And the father of one of these young women who killed themselves because of the deplorable poverty on the reserve said something very very moving to the media when he was talking about his daughter's death, and I think it's very apt that we say it for Kimberly Rogers as well. And I'll say it now. For Kimberly Rogers, not one moment of silence, but a lifetime of struggle. Thanks very much.
Before I introduce our next speaker, I just wanted to make everybody aware and say with delight that the wonderful drumming that we are hearing is from our allies from 3903, and that is the Guerrilla Rhythm Unit. And they've been very supportive of any of the actions we've taken here at Guelph and up at the university. So welcome. It's great to see you guys here. The next speaker that I'd like to introduce is one of our, as Clarice called it, her fellow grunt, and who on a daily basis lives his activism, a longtime Guelph activist, no need for any introductions, and a strong ally of mine personally and the labor movement, Ed Pickersgill.
I never look forward to doing these things. I wish they didn't have to be done. So my name is Edward Pickersgill, and I've been around Guelph since 1970. I've been on the planet since 1944. I'd like to welcome all of you to the backside of the Matrix Center. This building that we're sitting beside opened in November of 1996 and was the last of social housing in Guelph until Mr. Harris is gone, at least. During the election campaign that led up to June 1995, in the campaign office diagonally across the street from us, the Tory candidate, Brenda Elliott, actively, on a daily basis, told people who came in that room that she would stop that building from being built across there. That was our building, because we were at that time just a big hole in the ground. Unfortunately, we were able to anticipate what was going to happen in June of 1995, and we pressed ahead with all of our experience in social housing, and we made sure that lots of money had been poured into this. Everybody had their foot put to the ground, and excavation was finished during the campaign, and the footings and the foundations were laid flat out, foot to the ground. Spend the money. Because we knew there was only one thing that was going to get this building built, and that was the CIBC. There was only one thing that was going to defend that this building would actually come from dream to reality, and that was the defense that we would get from the legal department of the CIBC for the $8 million mortgage that they were looking forward to making tens of millions of dollars over a 25-year period of time. When the man was elected in June of 1995, the very first thing that they did was they gutted all sorts of social housing projects that hadn't got as far, that were still in design. Eliminated tens of thousands of units of nonprofit housing before they could go into the ground. And the people who are dying on the streets in Toronto, and the people who are homeless in Guelph, and the people who are dying, such as Kimberly Rogers in Sudbury, and others elsewhere, because there are others dying, there's only some make the newspapers. As Stefan said, some of them may very well have been alive if they had had housing, rather than just the streets. So I'm really, really happy that the activist community in this city was able to respond to what was a storm cloud on the horizon, and to make sure that this thing got built with its 70 apartments, its great community center, and this little step here that I'm standing on, because this is Matrix Affordable Homes property that I'm standing on. It belongs to the nonprofit community of Guelph. So what I want to say to you is I'm the only one who's safe here, because you're all on public property. Now, to the best of my knowledge, the officers are not coming back, those of you who pay attention to the sidelines of things. Two constables did come along to find out what this was. They were sent. And the reason they were sent is apparently, and I'd like to hear it just for, I don't know whether you can do a full 30 seconds or not, but there were some drums apparently. Were there some drums?
Yeah.
Could we hear some drums, like some We Shall Overcome drums? Because I heard there were some drums, and I love drums. Now, the sergeant down on Fountain Street got a call that there were some drums. So I'd like to know what you can actually do. Now that sounds good. That sounds good. I've heard that before. Heard that in London. Heard that in Hamilton. Heard that in Kitchener. Heard that in Toronto. That's pretty good. And we're going to hear that again. October 16th. Thank you. I didn't hear any drums. Anybody hear any? No. So they wanted to know if this was a protest. So I said, no, it's not a protest. It's a meeting. But that was just my opinion, and I'm up here on private property, and you're out there on public property. Right, Gail? Yeah. So the thing which I'd like to express is that between 1995, when Mr. Harris was elected, and about 1997, 1998, we had quite a strong dynamic presence in the anti-Harris campaigns in an organization called the Guelph Coalition Against the Cuts. And we went to all of those places where the drums were, and we made as much noise as we could, and we demonstrated against everything which came up. Education. We were there at the Holiday Inn when 35 citizens of Guelph were arrested and 7 were taken to maximum security detention center and subjected to a strip search, 7 women. And that is not ever going to be forgotten. And it's certainly, I don't know, I'm not a very good person. I'm told that I should learn to forgive but not forget. I'm still working on the not forget, the not forgive, I forget. It's an F word anyway. I'm a lot better well, never mind. The only the word in the English language that begins with F and ends with UCK is fire truck. So I'd like to say that it's time for Mr. Harris to get the fire truck out of the way. He's been fire trucking with the citizens of Ontario for way too long. And that's a fact. When Dudley George was murdered, and an OPP officer got sentenced to community service, he's fire trucking with us. And it shouldn't be permitted to pass. And when he poisoned the water in Waukerton, and killed 7 people there, that blood is on his hands, because they died bloody, those people. They didn't die by just passing away. They died in agony. And there's 1,000 other people still up around there who are living with the continuing agony of poisoned water. And that can't be allowed to pass. These people have to be stopped. Now, in all of the efforts that we made between 1995 and 1997, I only have one complaint. That's at 2:30 or 3 o'clock each afternoon when we had a day of protest, we were sent home. And that's no way to take a government out of business. If they know we're coming at 6 and leaving at 2:30, they ain't going to worry too much. But it was a good effort. But it didn't stop them. Because Mr. Harris just started saying, I don't listen to special interests. And he didn't. They've kept on doing what they were doing, and they've done it worse. In 1995, I spoke at the University of Guelph. And I said that this is not a hawk which is coming for a poor person. This is a steamroller which is coming for everybody, except a very, very small percentage of people. And that's a fact. And no amount of wishing is going to wish it away. So this is 2001. And I guess we've got to bring some kind of new space odyssey to Toronto on October 16th. We've got to tell that big computer it's time to unplug. They think they can read our lips, I guess. So along the way, what I've come to understand is that if we're going to be effective in stopping this oppression, then we have to stay longer than 2:30 in the afternoon. And we also have to make sure that those who are in our community and are not financial people, but are working people, who happen to be fortunate enough to be organized in unions, we have to make sure that they know, those of us who are not in unions, expect them to be there. Because when Buzz Hargrove, the president of the CAW, the Canadian Auto Workers, a fine and glorious union, incidentally, when Buzz Hargrove says that the poor and the underprivileged and the disadvantaged, the homeless, people with mental health issues, should find a way to communicate with Mr. Harris in a more polite fashion, that there should not be anything which the media and the Tories describe as violence, which was simply an eviction, a mock eviction of some office furniture. When they say that that is not acceptable, then they forget who they are. Because I'll tell you something. In the 19th century that somebody else has referred to this evening, in the 19th century, people were hanged in Chicago for exercising their democratic rights and for fighting for their rights for things like a vote, for fighting for their rights to do things like organize themselves into unions. The end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, we didn't have these things called unions. And they did not come into existence because somebody walked up politely and said, please let us have unions. So if Buzz Hargrove and Jim Flaherty, is that his name, or Flanagan, or one of those F words, the MPP, if they think that that was violence, they're operating in some other kind of planet than I am. Because I see violence every night in the work that I do. I see violence on the streets. Every night. I see people who are impoverished and suffering from the effects of drugs and alcohol. I see people struggling. I see people fighting. People are struggling with the effects of university education. I see them on Mac. It's not quite so well known that drugs and alcohol and university education are part of the problem on McDonnell Street downtown. Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, anytime between 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning, switch off the TVs, come downtown and watch the real fun. People who are, on the one hand, alienated, disempowered, separated from the capacity to live a life and have a family and in some sort of decent community, acting out, but not acting out in a concerted fashion, not acting out in an organized fashion. When I was going to come up here and speak, I wanted to say that I want to have 10 minutes of silence in exchange for my agreement to come here and speak, because I was afraid I'd run out of things to say. Reporters from newspapers from time to time call me up and say, do you have any comment on da-da? And I say, well, I'm really, really stunned. I'm really disappointed. I'm angry. I'm feeling dispirited. Which word would you like me to use on this story? Because there's an awful lot of the same thing. It's like being in a blizzard. And each of these, I'll tell you, a snowflake in the blizzard of oppression today, last Thursday, Woolwich Lodge on Woolwich Street, home to a lot of individuals with disabilities, and in Woolwich Lodge there's nursing care. It's owned by a corporation called Meadowcroft. It's a for-profit organization. It's a for-profit institution. Last Thursday it was sold. All of the people who live there were told they have to be out by September 5th. Not September 5th next year. September 5th this year. Where are they going to live? We have a housing crisis in Guelph. You can't get a lower percentage. The vacancy rate is so low in Guelph, nobody has a lower rate. But the governments and the statisticians, they see all these percentages as some sort of game, like it's a hockey game. You know, who's got the best scoring record? Who's helping to solve the problem in goal for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Something like that. But Mr. Harris says that when they killed social housing, the private sector, the for-profit sector, would step in, and the need of the marketplace would drive it so that the capitalists would build new places. There's a missing link in there somewhere. The people who are homeless can't afford to pay the kind of rents that the capitalists, bless their evil little hearts, need to make out of the properties which they build. So it's a no-go. Nobody's building anything. It's never going to happen. We've been saying that since 1995. So where are the people from Woolwich Lodge going to go? Or where are the people who are already 2,000 people on our waiting list at Fresh Start Housing Center? Where are they going to go? They're going to go live with friends. They're going to live in garages, basements with tiny little windows that are fire traps. People are living in those. Families are living in those. Mums and kids are living in Parkview Motel, going to school from the Parkview Motel. What is that? You got a bed. You got a couch. You got a shower. You got a microwave. You got a little cottage fridge. And you got a mum and three kids. Welfare is pouring all sorts of money into paying to the Parkview for that. Way, way more than it would cost to have them living in a two-bedroom or a three-bedroom place per month. And they're going to school from there. That's in our city. So it's not a hockey game. Mr. Harris would like us to believe that it's a hockey game, where every now and then there's a game. We call it a day of protest. And this team is Labor. And this team is the OPP. But it's not a hockey game. And if I can just take you to where my head goes with that metaphor, we're not an audience. And if Mr. Harris and his cohorts, his ilk, his fellow travelers, whatever, pick a epithet, if Mr. Harris wins, continues to win, we will continue to be seen as an audience that should play its role. We should come when we're supposed to, we should leave when we're told, and we should generally behave. And those who break out in some sort of misbehavior in the audience will get arrested by the police and taken to maximum security detention centers and strip searched and told to go home. But no, they haven't been charged with anything, so there's no court case. How long are we going to put up with this? So what I'm saying is we're not an audience. We can't be. I refuse to be part of an audience. All I can speak for is myself, though. I can only walk on my own feet. So I want to use another expression. As we go into a fall campaign of renewed, hopefully, even more effective anti-Harris programming, anti-Tory programming. We have to remember that it is true that Mr. Harris is replaceable. He is only a representative. Some people say he's only a puppet representative of where the real money is. Well, what I got to say is this. If he is the puppet, and he's a conscious puppet, and he's a standing there in front of his puppet between us and where the real problem in society is, then we have to deal with the puppet. If he's going to place himself there as a puppet on his salary, we have to go over him. And if any of you are wondering why OCAP is focusing on the financial institutions, it's because that's where the real problem originates. Mr. Harris is only a representative of something. To get at the real something, which is what the anti-globalization movement is about. That's why a whole bunch of us went to Quebec City. There are forces at work in the world which own the arenas in which the hockey games occur. There are forces in the universe which have even more money than Eric Lindros. And it's important for us to understand. Eric Lindros, he's going to go out and play for the New York Rangers. He's going to get knocked over. He's going to hit his head. He's going to get a concussion again. And that's what's going to be on the front page of the newspaper. If Harris gets his way, Eric Lindros' head will hit the ice on October 16th. So then on October the 17th, the front page Toronto Star will not be about the closing down of the financial district. It'll be about Eric's family, hoping that he's well. Because they control the media. They own just about everything, except they don't own this step that I'm standing on. It is possible for community activists to create places that are safe and affordable for people to live in. It is possible for community activists to tell the trade unions, among whom there are very, very many community activists and political activists, but it's important to tell the trade unions, QP is not enough. We need the rest of you too. We need CAW. And with all due respect to the way I understand the universe, we need the steel workers too. We do. And here in this city, we need the Guelph and District Labor Council. So I urge the Guelph and District Labor Council to get unanimous about the anti-Harris campaign. Because they're not unanimous. And they need to get unanimous. They need to remember where they come from and why they exist. And that's a fact. But I'll tell you something. If we're going to try and shut down Ontario this fall, this winter, this next spring, whatever, we can't do it without the trade unions. We can make a heck of a noise. We can compete with Eric Lindros for front page on the Toronto Star. But without the unions recognizing their responsibility in this community, it's going to be a long, long, long struggle. So what I want to close with is the word agenda. I have an agenda. My agenda is to live the best possible life I can. Stop screwing up and fire trucking up so much in my life as a human being, as a white man. Be a good person. And when I die, have some good memories left behind me. That's my agenda. That's what I have to offer my community. Now, what's our agenda? Our agenda, defeat Harris and his replacement, and keep on defeating them, because if you give them an inch, they're going to take our lives. Our agenda, all of the people who came here today, this is what I wanted to actually say. If some of us are going to be out there in October and November doing our best to shut down plants, shut down banks, shut down universities, all of that kind of misbehavior, we're going to deal with the officers who are going to come along, like two officers came here today. And I know them both. I know them from McDonnell Street at 2 o'clock in the morning. So they asked me what it was, and I told them. And they said, okay, fine. And they went and reported to their supervisor. And they came back, and they said, well, everything was going to be okay. What time was it going to be over? And I said, well, just about half an hour. Not a problem. So they said, thanks, Ed. But I've been on picket lines where they were on the other side, and they weren't saying, thanks, Ed. They got a job to do. Welfare. QP. Welfare. QP. That's who's employed in welfare offices. So when we go out, I hope to see QP, welfare workers, out on October 16th. City Hall, the representative of Ontario in this city. The city of Guelph is owned by the province of Ontario. We're a subsidiary. We have no constitutional existence other than that provided by the province of Ontario. City Hall, the mayor, NDP, QP, workers in City Hall. October, November, I hope to see QP workers from City Hall out of City Hall. Through a very freezing winter, OPSU was on strike. Ontario Public Service Employees Union, OPSU. Great strike, great event at the legislature. Made OCAP look quite peaceful. OCAP is actually a peaceful organization. October, November, payback time. We were there in the freezing cold at 7 o'clock in the morning on cross pickets out at Ignatius College up on Stone Road. I want to see unionists from OPSU out with us who work with the poor and the homeless. PSAC, CUPW, the postal workers, the federal workers. If they're not out, we'll just have ourselves a good day, but we won't achieve what we could achieve. So what is our agenda? When the officers come to the picket lines, they won't be saying, I don't have the power, and I don't want it anyway. They won't be saying, what is this, Ed? They will know what it is, folks. And they will know what they're going to do. And we have to know what we're going to do. What we have to do is we have to be peaceful, and we have to be prepared to defend ourselves. That's all. And if there is an our agenda, we have to know who we are. I know who I am. I'm not always clear on who we are. And that's not a criticism of you, it's a criticism of me. I can bring myself there to where we are going to gather, and if there's enough of us, our agenda will have a powerful, powerful voice and a powerful, powerful presence. But if the unions aren't part of us, then they're going to have to decide who they're part of. I don't want to be too depressing, but that is reality. I want to salute OCAP, as I've been trying to do since it was created. And I want to tell OCAP that there are a lot of people in Guelph who are very, very supportive of OCAP and who have written letters of protest to Buzz Hargrove and who want that decision to be overturned. But independent of that $10,000, as OCAP said immediately, we're not going to change anything because our agenda is not bought and paid for by anyone. So on that relatively negative note, I want to say I feel peaceful. I'm glad this is happening on public property. I'll be leaving this step in a minute. And if the next time they come, there's 50 of them instead of two, we just have to see what the outcome is going to be. What I would like to say is, in final closing, is the Guelph Action Network, which has organized this, which is a coalition of groups and individuals, I guess you could say, against Harris, against what that capitalism is doing to people who don't own stuff. The Guelph Action Network, in alliance with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, because that's what OCAP stands for, right? Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. What an evil thing to be. A coalition against poverty. If we can shut down the financial district in Toronto on October 16th for a day, that'll be fantastic. If we can eliminate capitalism by October 17th, I'll die the next day. With a big, big smile. Because what you're sitting on is what was here in the first place. This thing called public property. Before all this private ownership nonsense came along, was brought here, public property was a place where people could gather without police officers coming to say, what is this? What is this, folks? You're sitting on the ground, you're having some food, you're smiling and talking with each other, and the police come to find out what it is. That's what this society has come to. And that's really, really unfortunate. So, they told me I should speak for a short time. I'm still trying to figure out what that would be. So, in Guelph, hopefully in October and in November, whether people are coming from relative privilege or not, of unions and university jobs and all of this kind of stuff, hopefully, there will be enough people at whatever actions are held locally that we will all be able to say that we gave the very, very best shot to our agenda.
Ed's words are very well taken about where unions stand in this issue. I am proud to announce the next two speakers because I can tell you that the unions at the University of Guelph, which includes QP 3913, QP 1334, and University of Guelph Staff Association, are very clear on what the agenda is. We can't do anything else to get our brothers and sisters out here, but come here again and again and again and talk to them again and again and again. So I want you to hear the voice of labor on campus, and I'd like to introduce to you Marg Carter, who is the chair of the University of Guelph Staff Association and one of the allies in the labor coalition on campus, and Tony Cherry, who is the staff rep for QP 3913 and a member of QP 1281.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Ed, for the challenge. You've thrown down the gauntlet, and I hope that we as unionists... Go closer. I hope that we as unionists can take up your challenge. And in fact, I think you read my mind because those were my remarks. So I'm going to put on my glasses for a minute, folks. We bring the support to the Defeat Harris campaign from 2,000 workers at the University of Guelph. The newly formed labor coalition. I mean, I can say that I can thank Mr. Harris for one thing, and that is that he is bringing us closely together. We represent teaching assistants, sessional lecturers, secretaries, clerical workers, and technicians. We've recently joined forces with several students from the Central Students Association, and I'm really happy to see them here tonight. That's 10,000 students. So we're talking about 12,000 people, and I can honestly say that that's a fairly strong core of support from the University of Guelph. We're working together to coordinate bargaining, to work on safety issues, and we're in the process of forming an all-union women's caucus on campus. At the university, our struggles are similar to those struggles facing all public sector employees in the province. Issues of wages, pensions, health and safety, the usual. I hate to say it, but we are the lucky ones. We're the lucky ones to have those issues to fight. Compared to the growing number of men and women and children who face unbelievable obstacles in their daily life in Ontario. We're really lucky. We're fortunate. The political reality is those of us in the public sector, as Ed so eloquently put, have seen firsthand and unfortunately participated in the dismantling of the social safety net in Canada. Many of our workers have cried out politically with outrage at these cuts. Unfortunately, many have stood by silently while the cuts went on, thinking that they themselves were untouchable. Some of our workers now, single mothers, retired single women, have worked all their lives, now find themselves living at the poverty level. Others, although they've had the privilege of being waged, now find themselves in a situation where they have not been able to keep up with the cost of living year after year. But they have the power to strike, and they have the power to demand wage increases. I remind these people on a daily basis of how they are only a job cut away from living at the poverty level. If their job is cut, they'll find themselves in a world of greatly diminished or non-existent social services, dismantled education, and abysmal health care services. So those of us who are here tonight from the coalition, we've made a commitment to speak at every chance we get to our workers about the deplorable state that Ontario is in. I promise you tonight that I personally will do everything I can to put poverty on the agenda at my union meetings and to try to motivate workers at the University of Guelph to get involved, because the struggle is their struggle. It's everyone's struggle. Thanks.
Okay, I'm not going to be long. Yeah, where have I heard that before? When I started getting involved in the labor movement, I still had hair. I don't know how Ed manages to keep his, so I got to take some advice from him later on. All I want to say is there were times in speaking to people who come to these gatherings where I end up haranguing and preaching at the converted, and I could never answer the comeback from people. Well, why are you talking to us like that? We're here, aren't we? That means we believe. And I never had an answer to that until a few weeks ago back home. And the answer to that is, well, I'm preaching at you as I'm preaching at myself, so that the 150 that are here can go out and get one other person each. That makes 300. And the next time it will be 600. What I have learned in my time in Canada, which was a kind of a culture shock for me, is that the story that seemed to represent what happens in this country is the boil the frog story. Nothing radical happens, but little by little by little, you get used to what you're given. And you know what? I don't mean to sound critical, but honestly, personally, I'm sick and tired of hearing Mike Harris did this, and if Mike Harris hadn't done that, and if Mike Harris hadn't done that. Let me phrase that and end on this note on purpose, because I don't want us to go home, as Ed said, thinking this was a holiday and, you know, things will be better tomorrow. I'm going to end on this note. We let Mike Harris do this. We let Mike Harris do that. It's up to us. And the only thing we can do, as Ed said, is give it our best shot.
Okay, next we have Julie Nitcham and Diamond Charney from Kitchener-Waterloo Coalition Against Poverty.
My name is Davin. I work with the KW OCAP group. Sorry, I'm a bit out of breath. just ran, nothing else. I used to live in Guelph for 5 years, so it's nice to be back and see some familiar faces. Hopefully we're not going to talk too long. Do you want to...
My name is Julian, and I'm also from the OCAP group. I've been involved in political stuff for about maybe 6-7 years now, and the reason I got interested was my neighborhood's very, what you can call, underdeveloped neighborhood, and a lot of victims of Harris's campaign live there, so that sort of pushed you to get involved, if you know what I mean. Basically, I'll start with the history of our group. The group in Kitchener-Waterloo, the Kitchener-Waterloo Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, was formed at about the same time that the Toronto group was formed, and they've been around for maybe 5 or 6 years. During the days of action, they were very active in doing various acts to intensify the disruption against the Harris government. When Mike Harris came to Baden, we were the ones who screeched his bus, but that's all old news. Basically, we're here to talk more or less about our group and the sort of work we do, with a focus on direct action casework. Direct action casework is one of the main things that our group does. Now, you might be wondering what this direct action casework thing is, and basically, what direct action casework is we have a pager phone line, and we have an office now, and people are having problems with landlords or the bureaucracy of social assistance, disability, and that sort of thing. Come to us, and we listen to their case, and we help them persuade either the landlord or the bureaucrat in the social services building the validity of their claim. For example, if someone gets cut off welfare, we'll go with 10-20 people to the office and say, hey, listen, this guy better be instated or else type deal. So sort of like, you know, persuasion, that sort of thing. We think that direct casework, direct action casework, is very important, and it's because it creates the necessary space for the dispossessed to put forward their own agenda, and as well it empowers individual on social assistance who for most of their life gets pushed around by this or that bureaucrat. As well, it's very important because it shows that a big bureaucracy like the social services building needs to get shaken up once in a while. If not, people fall through the cracks. And what we like to do is we like to work one-on-one with these individuals, and we more or less provide, we create the necessary space for them to put forward their own agenda and show the validity of their claim. And as well, we don't do a lot of like demonstrations and that sort of thing, but we do something concrete. We give people something that affects them and something, you know, that's important to them as individuals. So we don't talk to them about some construed idea of some far-off time after the revolution when socialism will come and everything will be good. We give them something concrete, and that's what I think is important about the direct action casework. We're here to Davin will tell you about some of our successes our group has had.
I'm just going to talk briefly about one of our cases. I guess we were asked to talk about our casework specifically because I hear in Guelph that they are, or that people here are considering taking on this kind of casework. So just one example of a success that our group has had. There was this guy, we'll just call him Joe. For example, he was on welfare. He actually wanted to be part of the workfare program. He wanted to be active. He went out and actively found a workfare placement. He felt good about that, about doing something. He was then fired from that workfare placement because the employer suspected that he was involved in some type of fraud. And then the police investigated the situation. They investigated somebody else. They didn't investigate him. But because he was fired from his workfare placement, he was then cut off welfare. That's one of the rules. It's the same as if you get fired from your job, you're not eligible for welfare. So because he was fired from his workfare placement and cut off welfare, he was then facing eviction because he couldn't pay his rent. We went with him, with a group of us. We spoke with the director of the branch manager, and by the next day he was getting a check. Incidentally, the branch manager told us that the way that we were advocating on his behalf wasn't pleasant and it wasn't successful. But then the next day, this guy walks out of the social services building with his check. So. We've also worked with some of the community agencies, and I encourage the local group to do this. The Emergency Food Hamper Program, which delivers 18,000 food hampers in KW, is putting an OCAP flyer in every one of those boxes. So they've been really supportive, and it's really increased the amount of calls that we're getting, and we're able to help a lot more people out that way. Just to mention a couple of campaigns that we are in the process of getting going. The downtown, the Kitchener, the City Hall, they have a downtown development team, and along with the Downtown Business Association has produced this flyer called Real Change, Not Spare Change, and encourages people not to give to panhandlers, and it makes some blatantly false claims about how often people can get food in the downtown and that shelter is available to everyone when that's definitely not the case. And I think these kinds of things are going on in cities all around the country. So this I guess is the first warning to a Kitchener City Hall to expect a visit from us. We've tried the letter approach, and that's not working. And we're also thinking about starting an exposing slumlord campaign. And somebody came to us. They had been forced out of their apartment illegally, and the landlord had thrown all their stuff out, and that's going to be our first target.
Uh,
Another campaign that we're going to get involved with, and which was talked a lot about today, was the Defeat the Tories campaign. We've been talking about this for a while, and we're working with various different groups within our community. We're working with anti-racist groups. We're working with people from the CAW and QP. And basically what we're planning to do is we're planning to choose some targets and shut down our city. Some of the things we plan to do include student strikes, and we chose the largest business in the region. We're not going to name it, but on October 9th, it is the largest business in the region. It is the largest cash cow. So on October 19th, with some help from our brothers in the trade union movement and with the students, brothers and sisters, sorry about that, and assistance from students and other people, we're going to shut this place down. Maybe we'll get some nice cranes and stuff as well, block the roads and that sort of thing. Some other things we're planning to do is our region has this thing called Oktoberfest, which is more or less an excuse for people to come together and get drunk and eat sausages and stuff. And usually before Oktoberfest, what they do is they find squats and squeegee kids and that sort of thing. They try to clean the city to bring in all the tourists and stuff. On the big day of Oktoberfest, the big kickoff ceremony, we're going to have like a mass squeegee right downtown. And to top it off, we're going to have a homeless camp out in front of like the beer tents that night. One last thing I'd like to mention is because there's so many people involved in the universities that are going to be involved in this campaign, is we're going to target the campuses for acts of economic disruption, and hopefully we'll shut down the campuses as well, since they bring a lot of money to the region, and we'll force the Tories out of power.
Thank you. I'm just going to talk about something else, a little bit different from what we've been talking about. Our group, some people in our group, have been very actively involved in supporting the Stony Point First Nation. I was really happy to hear two of the other speakers mention the name Dudley George. We often hear of, you know, one of the first things that Harris did when he got to power was, this or that. And one of the things that, you know, Harris did when he first got to power was push the Ontario Provincial Police to murder Dudley George and to attack his community. So I'm just going to talk a bit briefly about that. This was in September of 1995. This September 6th will be 6 years since Dudley George was killed. And there's a group called the Stony Point Support Network that has sprung up. There's groups from five different communities that are participating in this network. And we're going to be organizing an action on September 6th, and I want to encourage everybody to be part of that. One action in London and one action in Toronto. And I very much consider these actions to be part of the OCAP campaign, being that one of the focuses is Mike Harris. That the London action, anyway, one of the theme of the action is going to be economic disruption. Let me just say a couple of things before I go on about the action itself. The community of Stony Point, when they were attacked, I think they experienced something that we are just getting a taste of right now in terms of the police repression. The crowd management unit that was part of the nearly 300 police officers that attacked that community is something that we are experiencing more and more. And First Nations in this country, of course, have always had that experience. So it's interesting that we're having that experience right now. Mike Harris was involved in the attack, and he's delayed a public inquiry for 6 years, saying that he didn't do anything. In the police logs, it's the OPP officers say that, you know, Mike Harris was pushing them to do something. There was a meeting the day before Dudley was killed where Deb Hutton, Mike Harris's senior assistant, was quoted as saying, Harris wants Indians out of the park, nothing else. And another senior civil servant has described Mike Harris's attitude around the occupation of Ipperwash Park as that he was hawkish on the issue. That was the word that he used. So there was definitely political there was a political push behind this attack on the Stony Point community. And as someone mentioned before, Kenneth Dean, who shot Dudley, he was sentenced to 2 years probation and 180 hours community service for killing an unarmed person and for lying on the stand. So on September 6th, please come to London. We're trying to get people from Guelph to London to be part of the action there. There's a flyer on the table over there. You can get all sorts of information on that flyer, who to contact. There's a local contact. We're going to organize a bus that's going to go from here to KW to London. The focus this year is on the coroner. And pushing for a coroner's inquest, which should have been done a long time ago. And so we're targeting the coroner's office. It's in this huge, huge provincial government building. There's courthouses there, the land registry office. And so we're going to target that building. So encourage everyone to come out.
Anything else?
Let's shut down the Tories, everyone!
Just before we announce our next speaker, I just wanted to point out something that's made me quite pleased here tonight, is that I look over appropriately to my left and I see the youth of Guelph, high school students and other youth sitting here listening to what we're saying. And I want to say welcome and encourage you to come up during the open mic and tell us what's happening with your group and what's on your agenda.
All right. Well, I'm not going to take up too much time because our next speaker is going to, you know, give it to us and then she's got to catch a bus. So, okay. So next we have all the way from Peterborough, Jess Lyons has come to talk from the Peterborough Coalition Against Poverty, PCAP.
Okay, I'm going to give it to you. Okay, basically, what I'm hoping to do here today is to bring another example of community organizing that's going on in a sort of vaguely similarly sized community in Ontario, and be encouraging, hopefully maybe even inspiring, and to also share some kind of nitty-gritty troubleshooting kind of organizing experiences. And hopefully that can be an exchange. I will stick around a little bit after my talk if people want to come up and exchange kind of advice type thingies. I just want to reflect on something I've been hearing a lot. Most of the speakers have been mentioning sort of the uniqueness of the situation we're in at this point in terms of organizing. And what I want to say about that is just that, you know, I see it as coming from a few different reasons, one of which is that things are getting worse. And things are getting worse. I don't even need to elaborate on that. And the other reason why we're seeing, I think, so much community organizing, decentralized community organizing springing up and taking off is because of the groundwork that's being done by OCAP and in small communities. This, like, the unification that's happening and the sort of widespread coalition building is astounding. And it gives me so much hope. It's, yeah, it's great. So, what I want to go through is basically just a little bit of what's really working for us and what are some of our challenges. I'm going to start with the challenges so I can end on a happy note. Peterborough is it's an interesting town because there's lots and lots of poverty, very high poverty rate, however you sources of income and where the real money is coming from is also very difficult to discern, because it's not a humongous industry town. It's not the hugest tourist town. So it's often difficult to figure out exactly what is the target, how to sort of tap into the most people at once, and to plan actions in that kind of landscape is also a challenge. A lot of our actions and a lot of our work happens downtown, and we sort of come across some of the barriers to working in downtown is the Downtown Business Association. And one example of the kind of challenges that we're facing is, you know, we spend a few hours a day, you know, say we'll spend 5 hours putting up posters everywhere, so the town is sort of completely postered. The next day, they're all down because the DBIA hires people to take just our posters down. So you can see that we're working in some kind of adverse conditions. Another example of a challenge, not to, you know, put a downer on you guys, don't worry, there's a huge list of positive things, but is one of the first issues that PCAP sort of took on was an issue that hasn't been actually talked about yet today, and I want to spend just a few minutes talking about it. And this is the clawback of the National Child Tax Benefit, which has been a universal program. It's sort of written into the Constitution that, you know, families with children get extra money on their social assistance checks. And it was a federal legislation that allowed provinces to choose whether or not they were going to take that money back. Many provinces chose to. A lot of that money went back into the sort of provincial coffers, but a certain percentage went into different municipalities for each city council to assign to different agencies, social service agencies, to apply for it. And this was really, really angering for a lot of the Peterborough community, and especially for the single mothers in the community, because they are lots of the receivers of this National Child Tax Benefit, who all of a sudden have, you know, $5,200 chopped off their welfare checks, who now then have to sort of, instead of having that money and being able to do for themselves, have to go to social service agencies, which are riddled with bureaucratic problems, to beg for that money, which is theirs. So that's one of the first issues that PCAP really took on, and started with, you know, really diplomatic presentations to social service agencies, and has actually found that they've turned their backs on us. And that is just one of the symptoms of how deep some of the problems related to poverty are in this province when you know, somebody's income ends up, and the sort of the whole system makes people feel like their hands are tied and they can't sort of unify together and refuse to take what isn't theirs and what should be given straight to people. So these are some of the, I'm just going to open my notes up again, some of the challenges that we're facing. But in the face of these challenges, as somebody mentioned, Stefan, we've been alive for 8 months, so we're a mere 8 months old, and PCAP was started on January 1st, 2001. I think it was somebody's very heavy New Year's resolution thinking sessions, and the membership has been exploding. We receive positive media attention, which is very difficult to get in Peterborough. We have up and running outreach campaigns that visit different communities outside of the downtown core to sort of encourage membership from all different areas in Peterborough. The organizing committees are building trust and are, you know, enjoying working together. And we have won every single advocacy case that has come up for us. And it's so funny, because often all that happens is somebody goes with a person to their welfare appointment and sits with them and takes notes, and all of a sudden everything is smooth sailing. So these like advocacy work can be very simple, just as an aside. We are beginning links with labor and union locals, and we've started a cop watch committee. And just a note about that, it was kind of a fluke. There was some very bad behavior, as there often is with cops, and a few people put together a really simple poster. They drew it themselves and put it, like, maybe 10, 15 of them up around town, specific targeting this officer. And we got CBC coverage for 10 posters. It was on the CBC for, you know, for a couple days, and they interviewed everyone, and it was all controversial. So, yeah, things sometimes, you know, work well. I'm just going to run through really quickly all of our projects to tell you that, to sort of give the impression, which is true, that so much can happen in 8 months. So we have almost weekly anti-Safe Streets Act protests, and they always get coverage, and they always reach more and more people who are walking by in the downtown core who become outraged with us. We do advocacy work. We have the Cop Watch. We have a monthly newsletter. We have our outreach campaign. We have committees doing communications and networking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have a fall planning committee. We are taking on this natural child tax benefit issue. And another thing that I wanted to plug pretty significantly, as was mentioned before, is that we've also taken on a Southern Ontario regional long-term strategy planning session, which is happening, as was mentioned before, Saturday and Sunday, the 8th and 9th of September. And the idea with that is that we're building a movement here. This isn't about Harris only. You know, it's about building a strong enough movement that Harris is gone and nobody, and what is in place of Harris when he is gone, wouldn't even dare attempt the type of behavior that is happening right now. And indeed, you know, in replacement of not attempting this behavior, but actually embraces the kinds of values and the justice and the caring types of communities that we believe in and are fighting for. So, yay! So that's the major thing that I wanted to bring today is simply that community organizing is absolutely integral, and community organizing together, like, knowing what is happening in KW and knowing what is happening in Guelph, and for us to know, you know, where we're all going to be at after October 16th, after November 16th, after December 16th is so important, because we have to stand up for each other, and we have to be able to attend to each other's needs in a more broad provincial kind of way, because that's what it takes. So fight hard.
Right. Okay, like, I'm amazed. This beautiful evening in August, it's not sweltering heat, and it's not, God, I love the rain, but it's not pouring rain, and here we are. Here we are talking about this campaign, talking what Mike Harris and his cronies have done to all of us and screwed us all over in this province, and here we are, and we're listening, and we're thinking, and we're going to be planning to shut this province down. Now, just before we get to our last slated speaker, because we are going to keep talking after, Amanda Dorder of the Guelph Action Network has the, I guess, dubious kind of honor of wrapping this first part of the evening all up for us. And I just want to mention a couple of things. I don't want to steal anything from Amanda's speech, but right now the Peak, which is an autonomous magazine published out of the university, is putting together a special issue for a Defeat Harris campaign. So we need articles and submissions from all of you. You got a story, you got an experience, you got poetry, art, and you want to get it into print and out around the province. You need to find out about the special issue of The Peak, which is coming out in early September, and there's information up on the table there. So without any further ado, did you want to add anything? Okay, I'm going to call upon Amanda Dorder of the Guelph Action Network. Thank you.
interesting thing about speaking last is I find most of what I have to say has already been said. We all here know what Harris has done to us, as people have said. We know about the murders that he is responsible for. We know our own positions in this province as a result of not only Mike Harris, but of all of the people like Mike Harris, Brenda Elliott, who is Mike Harris in Guelph, the Downtown Board of Management, who is fining people who are panhandling, trying to survive, all of the systems that, you know, give us only $520 a month or $960 a month or whatever. We know how it affects us. But perhaps what I can speak about today is why I'm here. Because I grew up in Guelph, and I have to say that I used to come here before this step of EDS was around, and before there was affordable housing here, and before there was a not-so-affordable art center. This used to be where I would come to try to get away from the life of fighting every day to survive, of trying to figure out how to pay the rent and trying to fight for control over my body, fight with my friends who were trying to support their families, just trying to live day by day. And I used to walk along the train tracks, and I, you know, just thinking, I have to get out of Guelph, and maybe someday I'll just keep walking and I won't turn back. And I used to sit on the bridge in the middle over there, a couple of drinks, a couple of smokes, anything I could do to escape my life at that moment. And I imagined a lot of other ways that that bridge could be an escape for me. But I'm still here today, and one of the reasons is because I did manage to escape in a sense. I had the dubious privilege of being able to go onto the university campus. And I actually thought when I went to university that maybe I'd have some kind of job security when I left. Or maybe I would find some answers to why the world was as fire trucked, if I may, up as it was, and why I was feeling so much like all I could do is leave and want to escape and get out. And when I came down off the hill, I didn't have a job and I didn't have those answers. But one thing that I learned was that the struggle doesn't have to be the struggle hand to mouth, day to day, just to survive. I was fortunate enough to meet up with people. I think the campus is a unique place where students, they may be working two and three jobs, supporting a family, but there's some flexibility and some sort of community that comes together where we can learn about the history, what happened in the 1900s, how we got welfare in the first place, what struggles people had to wage in order to win and to get to where we are today. And I learned that people can come together and fight back. And that, to me, was a really important lesson to take down off the hill and down from campus. And for years, I've spent years organizing to go to Toronto and beat the Tories, and to go to Ottawa and fight Chrétien's government, and to fight global free trade in Seattle, in Quebec, in Windsor, in Washington. Organizing always to leave Guelph once again to fight what I thought was the root of the problem. And it is. The rich people aren't here among us today. The people who are, you know, hurting us and oppressing us are not among us today, I hope. There may be undercover cops, I don't know, but generally speaking. But it did seem like we were always leaving and always leaving. And I agree with Ed, it's not pleasant to be up here because I don't think we should have to be talking about how we can take back control over our lives. And I don't think that we should have to be here figuring out how to fight our government. But the reality is we do. And if that's the case, I'm at least glad to see everybody out here today and to hear about the plans. Thanks. Because I think what's finally happening in Guelph is that we're realizing that this is where we're hurting, and there are people in Guelph that are doing it. When I get my welfare check, it may come from the government, but I pick it up at the welfare building here, and the workers, the QP workers, should exactly be fighting for an increase for me. And the banks, and I hope that they will be. You know, the landlords that are evicting us live here and own property here, and this is where we have to start to fight. So it's, to me, it's really great to see so many people here at least, and I really hope that we can come together in meetings and start to plan what our targets are. There are targets talked about, and I think that on September 6th, we'll be in London fighting for justice for Dudley George. And on October 16th, we will be in Toronto fighting against Mike Harris. But on November 5th, we're going to be here in Guelph. campus, the research park that has millions of dollars all the time in it, the place where they screw around with our food, and they like are funded by, you know, pharmaceutical industries that seek to medicate rather than support people. We're going to be downtown, where the downtown board of management is trying to like take away the spare change that people try to get to survive, or where landlords are kicking people out of their homes, or temp agencies are taking our wages, or factories are laying us off. We're going to be in Guelph shutting those places down, coming together and fighting against the government here in our community.